Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
You might have caught the story lately that Jonathan Thurston was in doubt for Origin 3 for Queensland after he flattened a ref in the last round. He was running full pelt, just went straight into the back of the referee and they both face planted, and he was possibly going to get banned. But he's been cleared to play, is the news today. He's been found not guilty. And it was actually three New South Welshmen on the panel who found him not guilty at the tribunal.
It's an easy mistake to make. You're out there, you're running around, you just, you know, you biffo into somebody.
Didn't see him.
Yeah.
Those three judges on the panel have since had their New South Wales residency revoked and are actually going to be extradited to Queensland to live in a swamp with all the cane toads they apparently love so much. That's the extra bit of the story you might not have heard.
iPlod is the the headline in the City Morning Herald on this one. Australia is now a wired nation addicted to work.
Oh.
Have a listen to this, I guess, this summary and see if you fit into this category.
All right, okay.
If colleagues on Facebook outnumber your friends, a smartphone is the last thing you consult before bed. Ooh. Maybe the first thing you consult when you get up. I've added that in for myself.
Touch and go on that one, yeah.
And you can't resist taking your laptop on holiday. It's time to get a life. Techno-enabled workaholics were being labelled.
Oh, how do you go on that quiz?
Oh, look, the Facebook one, I don't know. I haven't done the math on that one. But a smartphone, well, that's accurate. It's the last thing I consult before bed. And probably the first thing when I get up in the morning, I'll have a look to see what's happened.
That's true on weekends. Weekdays, I just get up and hurl myself in the shower.
The last one, though, I don't do that. I'd get in trouble if I took a laptop on holiday. Mind you, I haven't been on a holiday for a very long time, as my wife reminds me of constantly, and fair enough, she should. I wouldn't take a laptop on holiday.
I think you are exactly who they're talking about, Aaron.
But I don't take my laptop away. I wouldn't.
Tell me about your phone's capabilities, Aaron.
Oh, yeah, I don't need my laptop. I can do it all on my phone.
Uh-huh. Well, we met Samson the dog in the news, and a lovely black Labrador who's hit 85 kilos, so we thought we'd get the expert in on it this morning. Dr. Mike, our resident vet, talking obesity in pets. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Helen. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, thank you. I take it you've heard about Samson.
I guess I've not only heard, I've seen the pictures, and it's a fairly scary sight.
He looks like a sea lion.
he does, and I guess one of the things, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh my goodness, how did that happen? How could we prevent it? And what are we going to do now that we're in a situation like that? And it is remarkably common that our pets, especially dogs, in our society today, do get overweight.
And Labradors really don't mind a good snack.
You know, I think that is exactly where to start, understanding that there can be breeds, conditions, and even medication that can lead to, you know, the risk factor of obesity. And so, in some ways, forewarned is forearmed. So, yeah, I think that for pet owners, there are definitely some things we can do to prevent this sort of situation. One of the things to be aware of is that there are certainly breeds that are just predisposed to eating. I mean, when you think about some of the working dog breeds, you know, Border Collies, Kelpies, as they've come through my practice, as I've known them as friends and pets over the year, they're just usually, you know, lean, mean fighting machines. They're active all the time. They seem to know how to balance input and energy output so that they maintain a pretty lean physique. But for many of the breeds, like Labradors and Retrievers and some of the lap dogs, obesity can almost be a way of life. You sort of think, boy, have I ever seen a Labrador that's kind of about the right weight? They're almost always overweight.
Really? What's your nickname for them?
I don't want to say. Sometimes you see a beautiful black Labrador and I think, oh, no, here comes another Flabrador. And, I mean, it just seems to be built into their heads. I've definitely treated dogs and heard stories, you know, where a bag of dog food was brought home and accidentally left down somewhere low. They've actually opened it up and consumed the whole thing.
Oh, oh no.
Yes. And there seems to be some disconnect in certain breeds between, you know, I've eaten enough, I actually feel full now, I should stop eating. So being aware that you have a breed of dog, that you've taken one on as a pet, that could be in this class. So Labradors, Retrievers, and some of our small, you know, terriers, you know, things like that. We've just got to understand that, you know, they've got a predisposition towards obesity, so we've got to take care of them.
And what about into other kind of pets? What other animals are at risk?
you know, it's just about anything. You know, I have seen over the years, I've seen fat goldfish, I've seen fat rats, I've seen fat budgies. And, I mean, it's always going to be about recognising, you know, what is the ideal weight of our pet. Some other things can also play into it. So stage of life can have a, you know, you can have a dog who you know, up until 6 or 7 years of age, you know, I'm picking on dogs because I guess they're our most common pet and they are, you know, probably of the pets we see the most prone to obesity. You know, 6 or 7 years of age, they continue to eat as much, but they're not exercising nearly as much. And so they will tend to put on some weight. Third thing is that there can be times when they're on medication, which can actually, in, you know, and some of the medications, the anti-inflammatories we use for skin conditions, for example, can heighten their appetite and make them put on weight. So, you know, there are definitely breeds, stages of life, and things like medication that can put us in this situation.
So what do we do if we're in this situation?
You know, I think the first thing to do is to start taking measurements. Like, it's, you know, apply the same sorts of things. Like, if you knew yourself that you needed to lose a few pounds, I think the first thing you do is to hop on the scales and find out what you were weighing. Second thing is you'd get a little bit of advice. Like, you wouldn't just sort of, well, if you were sensible, you could get advice from, you know, like a nutritionist or a personal trainer or a doctor. Apply the same thing to your pets. So get them along to a vet. You know, it could even be a little bit embarrassing, but say, okay, I've come along for annual checkup, but I also want to talk about his weight. You know, and so they'll put him on a set of scales, get an accurate weight, and then you can start to put together a program. And so that could be almost certainly there's going to be it's got to be about dietary restriction and increased exercise. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Obese budgies, Dr. Mike. Really, how big a problem is it?
I tell you what, it can be, and hey, you know, those little budgies, they get addicted to the grey striped sunflower seeds, and I mean, for them, they've got more grams of fat per gram than a Tim Tam, so you know, you've got to watch them.
Are you serious?
Absolutely, yeah. So they're, I guess all of our pets are just like us. I mean, if we had a choice between broccoli and Tim Tams, we're going to go Tim Tams all the time. But really, responsible pet ownership means, you know, let's take notice of their diet. In older pets, using a light, you know, dog or cat food from about 5 to 6 years of age, it means that they can have sort of like the same volume of food, but they're getting much less fat, and then just increasing the exercise. One trap we really fall into is expressing our love to our pets through food. And so, you know, if we've been ignoring them all day, we've been out of the office all day, we come home, a really typical thing to do is, you know, show my love through feeding. I think we're going to have to change that and show our love through walking. Let's get out and do some exercise or throw a frisbee or go for a swim. Maybe not today, but let's get out and get active with our pets.
Good message across the board for us and the pets. Thank you so much, Dr. Mike.
I think I might have been talking to myself.
Yeah. It's been said that food safari is to foodies what Top Gear is to rev heads. In that case, we've always known who the Stig is. Maeve O'Mara from SBS, who for this season has been safarying in one of the most enviable locations on earth, France. Maeve, good morning.
Good morning.
So how much butter do you reckon you ate in your time filming in France?
I think my veins were actually sort of part butter. We've discovered the secret to that beautiful Paris mashed potato. Oh. It's more butter than potato. It's luscious and beautiful, but butter is just the key ingredient in France.
Oh, of course. And I just can imagine that'd be wondrous. At the risk of getting even more jealous, I suppose. Where exactly did you go in France?
Oh, we went, we of course landed in Paris. We went to Lyon, which is known as the gastronomic capital of France, and spent time in the markets there. We also met the father of modern French cooking, Paul Bocuse, who just happened to go down to the markets on a Sunday morning, and we had breakfast with him, so that was fantastic. We went to the mountainous Ardèche region, which was just a breath of a different sort of French life. We went under the ground in Champagne in the many sort of labyrinths in tunnels and drank some beautiful vintage champagne there. We basically didn't sleep for 2 weeks. We ate and we filmed.
It sounds like a tough gig, Maeve.
Oh, I tell you what, I'm just so blessed. And it is, you know, French food is so highly evolved, so intricate, and one bite and your eyelids literally flutter. I mean, we've just been lucky enough to go to, you know, some of the highest top restaurants, the best bakers, pâtissiers, and you do, you fall in love. It's fantastic.
Is there one recipe in particular that you've walked away with and thought, you know, I'm going to cook that for the rest of my life?
Absolutely. Well, there's many. And my co-presenter, Guillaume Brahini, who sort of opened up his beautiful French world, he has some sensational recipes. There's one that's on in the first episode for bouillabaisse, and you just look at this beautiful seafood, lovely peasanty dish come together, and you think, oh, I've got to eat that right now. It's delicious. But, you know, there's a lot of great recipes there. But, you know, some of them you look at and you think, oh, well, it takes 2 days to make a cassoulet. I'll do that as a project. But other ones are easy enough to put together, you know, fairly quickly and get those beautiful flavours.
It's not the healthiest food in the world, I guess. How do you balance your love of great food and all that butter with your health?
You caught me at the gym.
All right.
There's our answer. Easy as that.
Well, look, I think a little bit of exercise and then you can say yes to everything. So, you know, food is there to be savoured and enjoyed, not sort of, you know, you shouldn't live a blinkered life and think, no, I'm not going to eat that, because it's great to have some of the most beautiful flavours. But do you know what I discovered in France? They actually have smaller portions than us.
Uh-huh.
Just the way, yes. So I think we're used to slightly bigger serving sizes. But, you know.
That's a good
they
tip.
They are beautifully thin and very, very, you know, classy, beautiful people. And they just don't eat as much. And they don't have morning and afternoon tea. So they have a really good meal during the middle of the day. And France actually still stops for lunch. People stop, sit down, three courses, glass of wine. And I think we're working too hard in Australia. I don't think we've got that work-life balance sorted. And the French do. They've been recognised by UNESCO as having, you know, the way of life that we should all aspire to, as one of the sort of great intangible treasures of the world. So...
Great.
Yeah, no, wonderful journey.
And just before we let you go, I know you must get asked this all the time, but the whole reality TV cooking phenomenon that we've got in Australia in recent times, what do you reckon? Good thing or bad thing?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. You know, I think people are talking about food. They're excited by food. And I think food, one can learn a lot from watching it come together, particularly for men, I should say. If you can see a few ingredients come together and the result is delicious, then, you know, you're going to give it a go. So I think it's a wonderful thing that food is front and centre, and we're evolving really well as a food nation. We're keen to learn from everyone else, and, you know, it's a feast. So dive in.
Great. Hope you can...
portion.
Grab a baguette and a beret and enjoy watching yourself back and relive it all tonight.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Emperor penguins, Aaron. You might have seen them in March of the Penguins if you saw the Docker, or Happy Feet, another popular one.
I haven't seen either of them, but I guess that's, I've like seen in bits enough to know what they are. I think.
They're pretty much just restricted to Antarctica.
Uh-huh.
Except for this week, when one of them was going for a bit of a swim around his native habitat and got a little bit confused, apparently. Held the map upside down, couldn't figure it out. Didn't have much luck with the GPS. And ended up in New Zealand, 3,200 kilometres away.
How's that possible?
First time in 44 years an emperor penguin's been seen in the wild in New Zealand. Just showed up on a beach. Someone was out walking a dog and went, and see one of those every day.
That's a long way to swim.
It really is.
Didn't hitch a ride with a whale or a boat or anything?
Well, unconfirmed.
Okay.
But they can go a few weeks between feeds. I mean, that'd be all right.
That's
the wonder of fish oils and high protein diets, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
But I had an idea for this little penguin.
Yep.
I was thinking, I mean, you yourself, you're not a really big fan of maps and directions and stuff, are you?
No, I'm just hopeless. And even with a nav man, I still often have to do a U-turn. Uh-huh. Really do. It's just, I don't know how I do it.
I was thinking we could call him Aaron.
Oh, thanks. That's really kind of you.
Aaron, the misguided penguin.
That's
Aaron, the directionally challenged penguin. That's a little bit kinder, isn't it?
Directionally challenged, I prefer.
Uh-huh.
That's a fair whack off track, though, isn't it?
Yes. How far do you reckon you've got?
Once I was going to a conference. It was actually at the Collaroy Centre.
Uh-huh.
And I almost ended up at Newcastle because I got in the F3 and I couldn't get off.
Excellent.
I think that's the worst I've ever done.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well,
Aaron the penguin. Enjoy your swim home, little buddy.
Breakfast with Aaron and Helen. 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.